On the line, we've got Don Sutherland. Hello, Don. How are you?
I'm pretty good, Annie. How are you? And best wishes to all of your listeners.
Yeah, I'm okay. And is it cold down there or is it nice? And
nippy, and we've had wintry weather. That is wind and rain in the last couple of days. So,
well, it's coming our way. You've sent it to us.
White caps on Kanamaluka.
Yeah, but that's not why we're here to talk about the weather. We're here to talk about things like the minimum wage setting and a little bit about profits.
Yes, well, I think it would be good to just start with the industrial wage and then look at the obverse of that, which is sort of what's going on the production side as well, because those two things are connected. There's a great interaction that goes on between them. So, of course, and I really don't want to say much about the outcome, which is 3.75% in the annual wage review, but really more about the process. And the essence of the process with the setting of the annual of the national minimum wage and the minimum rates in all awards is the deliberate intention to alienate workers from the process. The Act specifically is designed to ensure that low-income workers have practically zero agency in their own right as a collective in any exchanges, whether it be in the form of consultation or bargaining, over the level of their wage. And yet, that aspect of the industrial wage, that is the minimum rates, both the national minimum wage and the minimum rates and awards, that is the starting point for the struggle over living standards. And there are so many dimensions to that struggle. So the distinctive feature of the changes that have been made to the Fair Work Act so far by this Labor government, two-thirds of the way through its first term, is that nothing has been done to enable workers themselves. It's all down to technocrats.
So what you're saying is that everybody else looks at the and everybody who is low paid wages, who are on low pay wages, are not at the table.
They're not at the table. That's right. There are, to the extent they are in unions, there are union officials at the table. But it would be very rare, actually, that elected union officials are at the table in the annual wage review process. It's rather very well, from the point of view of workers, very well-meaning, very sincere, and very competent advocates, if you like, both economists and lawyers. But it's all being done far removed from the daily experience, the daily life, and the potential of low-paid workers to take more command over the struggle to set their living standards.
When you said that to me, I found that really fascinating, that it actually stopped me. I thought, you're completely correct. Like, we take it for granted that these echelons of people are there to resolve the issues of and that they know better and all the rest of it. But that's actually turning everything up on its head, isn't it?
Well, I think that is. I think where it takes us is you can do an interesting comparison. So the struggle, there are many dimensions to the struggle over living standards. The annual wage review is one that produced 3.75%. Over the same period, executive salaries went up in a range of 11 to 14%.
Yeah, I know.
Executive salaries, talking about CEOs, deputy CEOs, finance...
And when we say that percentage, we're talking, you know, thousands, if not millions in some cases.
Yeah, proportionately huge increases relative to that which goes to low-income workers. Are they subjected to the same process of control and regulation? No, they are not.
It's a disgusting fraud, really, isn't it?
It's completely logical in the context of, you know, we live in a capitalist system. These are the people who manage capitalism on a day-to-day basis. These are the people who get paid more, who get their 11 to 14% increase to the extent that their company successfully increases the rate of exploitation of workers.
And, you know, it's interesting because, just as an aside, this bullshit coming out of Dutton about nuclear is an exposing, exposes how the mainstream media actually work as a propaganda campaign or PR firm for the LNP, and obviously also for the capitalist class. I know I'm not telling anybody things that they don't know, but it's so obvious.
Well, I think it's a terrific connection to make between, continuing our theme, we're talking about the struggle over living standards. Firstly, some really good news. At the end of this month, July 29th and 31st, one of the best and fastest growing organisations for workers about energy policy is the Trade Unions for Energy Democracy.
Yep.
And their division called the Trade Unions for Energy Democracy South is meeting in Bali in Indonesia, of course, July the 29th to the 31st, with preparatory meetings. And there are Indonesian and other Southeast Asian energy unions participating in this discussion about how workers can have greater control or agency, to use a more polite word, you know, the academic word,
yeah,
have more control over the ongoing development of energy supply policy so that it is based on a public pathway, that is public ownership. And this is the terrific development that's happening right next door to us in Bali. And so far the reports are not indicating whether Australia is participating. It may be we're not invited because it is the meeting of the Global South, unions from the Global South. A whole lot of unions from different countries in the Global South, in the Southeast Asia-Pacific region, I should say, will be there from Bangladesh and India, Indonesia, Nepal, Pakistan, the Philippines, and South Korea. And I see that Singapore is not mentioned. I don't understand that yet. So Irene Hongping Shan, who was the lead organizer for this event, has laid out the goals of the event, and I think it's a fantastic thing. And it represents a counterpoint, if you like, to what you have referred to, Dutton's nuclear madness proposal, his upside down madness proposal to go nuclear by the middle of the 2030s. What we know about that is that it is, I think it's a lot more about strategy, about destroying, interfering with at the low end, and destroying is the real objective. The emerging commitment to generate private sector investment in a democratic and a just transition to renewables to replace fossils. That's what it's about.
Yeah, I agree.
It's the product of gas corporations and the likes of Gina Rinehart influencing his policy and trying to find roots deep into Australia's working class using organisations like Advance Australia. So this is a really serious thing. Now, there are two things about Dutton's madness that relate to living standards that are correct, actually. The first is that there is indeed a private sector investment problem.
Sure is.
We've discussed that in previous discussions. The proportion of profits being reinvested into anything, even renewables, is far too low in Australia.
Yeah, lazy.
Well, no, not lazy. They are very active in directing their investments into gambling in the money markets. They spend a lot of energy on that themselves, and also taking it offshore where profitability is higher. So they're quite active in their own way, but just not in a way that is socially useful for the Australian majority and which protects and generates improvements to living standards. So Dutton's proposal will be immediate downward pressure on the standard of living of most Australians, particularly those whose incomes are less than the median wage.
Oh, goodness.
But not exclusively there. The second truth is he says that it has to be funded, by the government.
Yeah, the public purse.
Funding. So that is a bigger impost, a bigger encroachment on the social wage aspect. That is, it has serious implications for getting back to pro-corporate tax rates. It has serious implications for further downward pressure characteristic of LNP governments on the healthcare system, on aged care, on disability care, on childcare, and, of course, on the education system in general.
Everything that actually makes a society operate.
So we are, exactly. We are seeing the interactions between, if you like, wages policy, the industrial wage, the social wage, and investment interactingly powerful, already delivering downward pressure on living standards, but likely to get worse if we have an LNP government hell-bent on the nuclear madness.
You know, it's like Australia's Brexit moment, isn't it? there's so many people in England who are very unhappy about the result of Brexit.
Yeah. So this is, I think, to go back to the way we should understand living standards is that it's not just a distribution issue. That is, the level of the industrial wage, the level of the social wage, the level of executive salaries relative to workers' wages and so on. It's not just about distribution. It's also about production. And in Australia, our modern union movement, with two or three honourable exceptions, are not on top of how to pursue workers' interests on the production side. And that has to change.
Explain that.
Well, it means that we have to understand that what the Labor government is doing about a Future Made in Australia Act as a stepping point for a democratic and just green transition is inadequate, but absolutely necessary and in our interests and must be continued instead of being interfered with. And I think tactically, the Greens have a lot to offer on this front. The dilemma is that both the ALP and the Greens make their own unique contribution to the problem by choosing to fight with each other as the first option instead of fighting together against.
But that's not surprising. Labor does things like, when it comes to the election, what they do is they prioritise the Liberals over Greens because of their strategies.
I think it's a good deal more complicated and it cuts both ways. And we who look at it in despair sometimes have got to find a way to exert greater influence on both parties so that there is a more powerful interest that delivers immediate tangible gains in living standards. And that's where this government is doing a number of things that are small and in the right direction, and some are a bit better than small, but it's nowhere near enough. It's not reaching people, particularly in regards to housing, of course. And housing is a perfect example of the connection between production and distribution. The solution to the housing problem is not just in distribution, it's also on the production side.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see. That's a really good example. Yeah.
Yeah, and the issue is whether we want that production to be controlled by the private sector for profit, or do we want it controlled publicly for social need?
Yeah,
and
okay.
That
yeah.
we have to get much better at. Mm. That is, we who are to the left of the Labor Party and the Greens, activists in feminist organisations, environment organisations, we must unite around those themes as a matter of urgency instead of being separated as we are, fighting in our little enclaves. So I think this is, when we go back to the industrial wage, for example, all the two major ways in which people get wage increases is through the annual wage review and through enterprise bargaining. Both of them are designed to minimise and take away power from working people and their unions. And the change we've yet to see, whether the modest changes made by Labor around multi-enterprise agreements and so on will have effect. We're not seeing anything dramatic happening yet. There is no data available, even though there has been bargaining on those fronts, on multi-enterprise agreements emerging now and happening. It's too early to see whether it's going to be the momentum that working people need. So we need the continuity of a Labor government, but we also need that to happen with far more influential democratic and socialist characteristics. And we can do that if we get our heads together and pursue that. The final point is that we are struggling on all of these fronts in the context of the stagnant economy. There are not many economies around the world that are in growth. I think I know of about three at the most. And the rest are at some degree of stagnation, and some are actually in recession. We are just doing marginally better. And that is not normally good circumstances for us to win distribution struggles, that is, industrial wage and social wage. But it has been done. We did it in the context of the recession in 1982, and we can do it again, even though we have far less union density than we once had. But we've got to think about all of these things that are going on in terms of their interconnections, and particularly the relationship between the importance of the production side of the struggle. Producing for a democratic and just green transition in which there are more and more bigger commitment to skill formation in the working class that flows through to higher living standards.
Okay. Thanks very much. That was a very interesting conversation.
Oh, I was getting into a bit of a rage, really, wasn't I? I wasn't much.
No, that was very interesting. No, but it was very interesting. Thank you very much, Don.
Well, let's keep thinking about these things and create a sense of urgency about the next 12 months, because we can win this battle in the short term and lay a foundation for a longer term progressive development for everybody.
Thanks, mate.
All the best. Bye.